Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
He's looking young. He's looking beautiful. And that's just on the radio side. Marty Baron is co-piloting once again, but in the finale of yet another terrific year. We're on the eve, Marty. A big celebration.
Well, there's a little bit of controversy because birth certificate and everything says August 15, 1977 was my birthday. But I was born at 12.02 a.m. and my mom always said that she kept her alarm clock about 5 to 7 minutes ahead because when she woke up in the morning, she wanted to give her a little time. Now, she doesn't remember if when the doctor delivered me, if he looked at the alarm clock or if he looked at the actual clock on the wall and says 12.02. So when they wrote the papers down, they said 12.02 a.m. And then she mentioned it to the nurse later, like, did he look up there or there? Because there's like a discrepancy. Maybe it was 11.56, not 12.02, right? And the nurse said, the paper's all like done up. Like, I'm not redoing paperwork. So maybe I was born on the 14th.
But happy birthday.
Maybe it's my birthday today. I don't know. But I think that technically it's tomorrow, but maybe I was born on the 14th. We don't know. We don't know.
Summer of learning. I know so much more about you this off season than ever before. So maybe we could have the NHL go in and do an audit of the stats on, you know, your birth. It's funny because I was going to mention that I'm feeling very NHL-esque based on the last 24 hours. I did my own internal audit. So my concerts on goal has changed. I forgot in this list that I've been carrying, one of the biggest shows I went to this year, Zach Bryan, was not, and I didn't know until it popped up on the radio. And I'm like, oh, friggin' love this song, this right? And then I'm like, wait a minute. I haven't seen his name on my concert list this year, so I went back. So who knows?
Usually with the NHL audits, it's like they take away shots, take away hits, take away like, you know, points.
That's right, because they
measure add them.
The goalie, you know, like shutout record, like Craig Anderson. Oh, 51 saves for Craig, and then it's 50, and then it's 49, and it's like, well, this is mildly depressing.
So we're celebrating a milestone and just to be told the next day, no, that didn't happen. That was all yesterday. Today is different. But I will say this. I like that the NHL is doing a better job at trying to be precise because there's a gambling aspect to it. Like, but the problem is that being precise the next day doesn't help your gambling. If you, let's see, I had Rasmus Dahlin for 4.5 shots in the game. And at the end of the night, I had him over 4.5 shots in the game. At the end of the night, they say, game sheet, 4 shots. Well, I don't win my bet. Then the next day, they add Rasmus Dahlin a shot. Well, it's over. I lost the money, right? Like, that's it. I ripped the ticket. It's in the garbage. Same thing happened. If I had Rasmus Dahlin under 4.5 shots, and after the game, it says at 5, but the next day, they take one away, there's nothing you can do. So the fact that they are doing it the next day or hours later, I mean, it's fine overall, but it should happen in real time much better so that, you know, the degenerate skin that are gambling on shots on goals and all of that out there. Sorry, people. But I mean, if you're that deep into your things, it gets a little ahead of you. Yes.
Your glass house is in need of major repair.
I know. Wait, how many corner kicks was there between Man U and... Was there an ad? That should have been a corner kick. I'm telling you.
Oh my gosh. Well, we have a team of the day. It's LA. As most people know, it's one of the teams I watch the most, have so since 1999 when I first got the center ice package. So thank you, Kings, for always being the late telecast and giving me something to watch at 10:30 Eastern time. But before we get into that, did you see the light bulb that just went on here? Part of the reason that I loved the Kings from the outset in 1999 and watching the broadcast was Bob Miller and Jim Fox. And if you're going to talk about legends, then we should give a quick mention to Sam Rosen, who's entering his final lap. Bob Miller, like, so steady and lovable and just like, I don't even know. It's so funny because we're talking coast to coast here with Miller in LA and Sam in New York. And you would be really hard if you tried to press every single person in the NHL that's crossed paths with both these guys. You'd have a split decision on who is the nicest person ever to do the job.
There's so many great people, but you're right.
Right.
Like, this is the top of the list, right? Who is the, and Sam Rosen, unbelievable. I tell you, so many amazing conversations I've had post-practice on the road with Sam Rosen and Joe Micheletti and Kenny Alberts and all of that crew in New York is fantastic. I once sat next to Sam. He was getting ready to call an NFL game on Sunday. We had Thursday game on the road. He was flying back with us and then Friday getting on a plane to go call. And he had his sheet of the NFL game he was doing and his research. I'm like, That's what I would want to do. Like just the preparation, everything. Now, interesting enough, Sam Rosen, because I was born in 1977, he started calling Rangers game with MSG in 1977. He was the backup to Marv Albert on the radio and Jim Gordon on the TV side. Funny that Marv Albert was radio, right? I mean, we're talking about the 70s. There was probably more people listening on the radio than on TV. I don't know. Like, that was such a
both,
thing, right?
Both of them were everywhere.
Yeah, they did
really
everything.
Like, as it all evolved, like, I mean, it was all multi-sport, right?
And then Sam was a studio host in 84, in 82, and became the Rangers TV broadcaster in 84, 85. So that's a career. Like, I know we had RJ here, and we're a few days away from... You know, obviously, his passing last year, Rick Jenneret, but so we're going to talk about RJ quite a bit. I would think it just it's on most of the fans' mind when I talk to them. But RJ was 50 plus years with the Sabres and in the business or whatever. Sam Rosen, we're talking about 46, 47 years with the Rangers. Like that is the same impact for the fans of the New York Rangers hearing Sam on the TV since, you know, the early 80s.
Yeah, and Bob was over 50 in LA, and it's just amazing. Yeah. And we can never take it for granted how comforting, enjoyable, excitable, fascinatingly knowledgeable all these people in their own way. You know, they are the kind of the subconscious reason that some people fall in love with sports. They don't know why, but they get hooked. By a sound, by a choice of words, by an excitement level that comes through a medium. And now it doesn't really matter, right? I mean, it's your phone, it's your laptop, it's any platform that you find it on. And yeah, Sam will be revered forever among Ranger fans, but also NHL fans. So,
you know, his trademark line, like RJ was where mama hides the cookies and all of that.
It's a power play goal.
Right? It's a power play. So really... That I asked Sam one year, like, how did that start? Mm-hmm. And he was calling, I believe, was lacrosse long, long time ago. And they had a sponsor. And, you know, whenever they scored, it was like, the sponsor was like, let's see, it's a blah, blah, blah goal, right? And he had to say the sponsor right away. And then he was calling a Rangers game and it was a power play. And right away... Like the same reaction to the sponsored element that he had to use when he called something else came up. Yeah. It's a power play goal. And it just took on. Like it that's like it's the like in Philly, Pico power play. Like it's just it's been
what
forever.
Was the what Jim Jackson also had something.
Oh, for a case of tasty cake.
Tasty cakes, yeah.
He hated that. So okay. So
good. Sam I'm Rosen, glad I love Jim and I'm glad that he hated it because it was ridiculous.
Sam Rosen, the power play goal, it's everywhere. It's on every call. Jim Jackson in Philly, a sponsored element was, and it came back when I was in Philly. They didn't have it for a few years. And then Tasty Cakes, which is really big in Philadelphia, Southern Pennsylvania. So they sponsored the goals for the TV calls. And JJ hated it because he says they can never use my call on highlight shows because I always say, you know, let's just say Danny Briere, goal for a case of Tasty Cakes and other broadcasts and NHL Network, they don't want to have competing sponsors. So they never use JJ. So they always use Team Saunders on the radio for the call, but never JJ. And he hates it.
That's amazing. I never thought of it. And then as soon as you started the story, I'm like, oh, this is understandable. I mean, yeah. You know, in
he
a world
tried to do it like where you would do it later in the call. Like he would say, every article, Flyer scores. And then he would go through the replay. And at the end, he says, and there's a goal for a case of Tasty Cakes. And then the sponsors didn't like it. So you had to do it at the beginning.
Gosh. Anyway,
I know. There's a business. There's a business for you.
It is the business. The Kings' business is they are the team of the day. So, 3 straight years ousted at the hands of the Edmonton Oilers in 7 games, in 6 games, in 5 games. Since last winning the Cup in 2014, that's 10 years. They've had 5 first-round exits and 5 playoff misses. Mm-hmm. And the business this offseason was the acquisition of Darcy Kemper with years to go on his deal.
Yes.
The signing of Joel Edmondson for 4 years and the additions largely up front of Fogel and Tanner Janot.
Yes.
The Kings statistically pretty darn good power play last year, 22% elite penalty killing. They were number 3 in goals against average behind only Winnipeg and Florida, and they were a decent offensive team. They ranked tied for 11th in the overall standings with 99 points. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have a chance to get any better this year.
No. I think they look.
They're the Kings, like, here's the thing. They're good. I think they're a really good team. I look at their top 6. I love it. I think there's impactful players on the blue line, and who knows when Brandt Clark is going to become that next impactful defenseman. But I just can't see them going head-to-head like a running joke. Like, well, what would happen if they played Winnipeg? Like, I just don't think they can beat the best teams, the Vegases, the Colorados, the Dallases, and presumably the Edmontons of the world meet again.
They could finish 4th in the Pacific. The LA Kings are probably the 4th best team in the Pacific. I think Calgary, Seattle, Anaheim, and San Jose are going to be, maybe Seattle can surprise and finish 4th, but I think the LA Kings are probably slotted to be 4th or 5th in the Pacific. The problem is the Pacific is not going to send 4 teams to the playoffs like they did last year. Like in the Central, you have St. Louis, who's continued to try to get better. Minnesota, who I think is going to take a step forward. Last year was a down year. Nashville, who took they had a streak, an unbelievable streak, and got in the playoffs. But Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado, Nashville, St. Louis, Minnesota, Utah, maybe even could be on the stop. So there's 7 teams in the Central. Hey, the balloons.
And happy only birthday, 3 in Shea Weber. Yeah. Happy birthday, Shea Weber. Oh. Previously Utah's highest paid defenseman. No longer, though. Sergachev has that crown.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sergachev signed a big contract with them. So good. Multiple balloons for Shea Weber. But no, if you're the LA Kings, what they did last year, 99 points, was about the most you could even consider them getting this year. It'll probably be in the 90. 88 to 92, 93. But I don't think that's going to get them in the playoffs. Now, they made a coach change last year. Mm-hmm. Todd McLellan is a great coach, in my opinion. Did really good for the LA Kings. Couldn't get out of the first round, losing twice to the Edmonton Oilers. And they had a bad streak going into the All-Star break. They make the coach change. Todd McLellan was a .583 point percentage when he left. At the end of the bad streak, Jim Hiller came in and was a .632. So he was better. But I feel like the LA Kings won games, but were not a better team to watch. Their numbers, it would have to be really a dive deep into what their offensive numbers, defensive numbers were with the two. But I didn't see with my eye test that the Kings were a better team under Jim Hiller. I think they played better defensively, and they had to. But other than that, like, I don't know that they were there.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, this is a really hard conversation to have in the sense of the flip side of the coin as far as roster construction or deconstruction is concerned is forget all the names I mentioned that are now on the roster.
Yeah.
If you had said to Kings fans at the end of the season after the disappointment that you were going to get out from under the Pierre-Luc Dubois deal, Kings fans probably would be happy. So there's a trade-off here, right? Everything comes with a trade-off. I don't think anybody was signing up for multiple years of Darcy Kuemper, even though he was really good in his first go around with the LA Kings prior to going on to win a cup in Colorado. Mm-hmm. I just think, again, I can't stress it enough. Now, remember, reports of Andrei Kopitar's demise were premature after that dash six he took in Buffalo.
Against the Sabres, 7-0 loss like, to the Sabres.
The retirement press conference for the next day was canceled after sober second thought, but he went on to another 70-point season. And do you know who led the Kings in goals last year without looking?
Because I wrote it down. I was going to ask you.
Trevor Moore, 31.
Trevor Moore led the Kings in goals with 31, and Adrian Kempe led the Kings in points with 75.
Yes, so, a rare time when Kopitar did not lead the team in
points. That would be a very good Jeopardy question, which hockey categories on Jeopardy are always not good anyway. If you ask anybody there to see who led the LA Kings in points and goals, they would never guess Kempe and Moore. I think Kempe
Film it in Hollywood?
Yeah, probably.
Somebody's got to have some insider knowledge on the way in.
Has to be able to let them know. But no, but look, Quentin Byfield, Anze Kopitar, Adrian Kempe, is that a number one NHL line? Absolutely. They have that, right?
And then they their top with, 6 to 8 is very good.
And then they follow with Deneau, Moore, and Fiala. Like, that's good. That, to me, is fine. Turcotte's a good young player. Third line, right? They added Warren Fogle.
Unproven,
but they added Warren Fogle. They added Tanner Janot. Arthur Kaliev, that's another question mark.
He's not going to make it.
You don't think he'll be there this year?
Look at it. He's still sitting there as an RFA. He has nothing to bank on. The Kings didn't even use him when he was available. He scored one time in his final 31 games.
Yeah.
Like, why they even are sitting here with this player contractually, you know, available to this beyond me. Like, they should have just cut the
cord. So you don't think there's going to be an offer sheet on Arthur Kaliev? Should we push for
that? What is the minimum offer sheet?
Well, it's whatever the minimum is. Like, you can, like, I mean, Kaliev doesn't have arbitration rights. So not that he would have gone to arbitration, but he's too young for that. So 7 goals, 15 points in 51 games last year. I mean, if you're Philip Broberg, that's worth $4.5 million.
Wrong position for Kaliev, though.
Yes.
And he just got squeezed. Yeah, it's, I again, this is an unfortunate situation. I had higher hopes for Kaliev. And there's just been, you know, I don't want to, some people would say, a lot of people always like to, you know, blame the coach in these situations, right? Didn't get the right combinations, didn't get the right ice time, didn't do this. Again, the truth always lays somewhere in between. And it just doesn't work for Kaliev. So I would hope that he finds a way to come back into the league. But I'm not banking on him having any measure of success
in
LA.
You gotta take it in your own hand. If you're Kaliev, do something about it. And I'm not saying whine and complain. Like, Quentin Byfield had a fantastic start to the season under Todd McClellan. They make the coaching change, and Byfield went really cold for a while. But what did Byfield do? Turn it around and finish the season strong. And I think that's what you have to do if you are a player that a team can trust. And Byfield, for me, is the future. Like, you know, Kopitar has been like the past, and Drew Doughty has been part of that. But I think Quentin Byfield is that future for the LA Kings.
Well, I'll tell you this, based on where I was at a year ago, the Kopitar extension of 2 years at $7 million per seems far more palatable now, because he is Mr. Consistent. And because he has enough good forwards around him still, I think there's no reason he can't get into the high 50s, mid 60s like he has traditionally done, other than those markers where he goes over 70. So there's no real concern there with Kopitar. And Byfield, the deal was friendly, right? Like, it's how do you even call the deal on Byfield now? Is it like the bridge to Charlottetown? Like, is it
a long bridge?
Is it a long bridge in from Canada's mainland out to Prince Edward Island?
Listen, Quentin Byfield had 20 goals last year and 55 points. I mean, he's still a young player. What old is he now? I'm looking. He's 21. So he signs a 5-year deal at $6.25 million. I mean, even if he gets you 55 to 60 points a year, that's worth the deal itself.
But
he'll get you 65, 70, 75 points, may get you 30 goals. That is 8, 9, 10, right? I know he's young. I know it's not the 8-year extension after your entry-level deal. It's also not the 2-year bridge. It's a 5-year middle of the road. I like the deal. But what it does to Duffer is that Kevin Fiala signed until the 27-28 season. Byfield signed until the 29 season. Deneau is signed for 3 more years. Kopitar's 2. Trevor Moore, 4. Adrian Kempe, 2 more. Like, I think they settled themselves for the next 2, 3, 4 years. They have their core guys signed up for that long.
However, a year ago at this time, Dubois was supposed to be a franchise-altering long-term player to really add to that mix. And it didn't happen. So now, even with the names you just mentioned, and I like them, they are good, and I can't go beyond good. Good is presumably not going to be good enough for Rob Blake to keep going as GM, right? So what, in now revisionist history, because most of this summer is behind us, like, what should or could have Rob Blake done to make a major impact on this Kings team so people would actually believe? And I'm not saying nobody does, but I just think it's hard to, based on how good the Oilers are. Like, what could they have done to really position themselves to get over the hump? Like, what else bold would you have seen them do?
Well, I think they tried, and the rumors of the LA Kings trying to acquire Linus Olmark was one that circulated. Like, if you get Linus Olmark, just like the Ottawa Senators did, you're solidifying your crease. All of a sudden, your team looks a lot different, because the LA Kings haven't had a standout goaltender since Jonathan Quick. And since Quick has been, kind of moved into a secondary role, and now the backup with the New York Rangers and Igor Shesterkin, like, who's been there for the LA Kings? Cam Talbot. It was Phoenix Copley.
Phoenix is still on the roster.
Yeah, so they have three right now. They have,
but they signed him. And I want to do this. Like, I appreciate goodwill gestures, and I don't want to minimize it by calling it that. But when someone overachieves at a low, low, low contract and then blows out a knee at the height of, like, a career moment where Copley had established himself as an NHLer, the fact that the Kings gave him another year to be, like, the number three, I love and respect that.
Not only is it another year, it's a one-way contract. It's $8.25 guaranteed, up or down. And then most teams are going to start doing that, because you need three goalies and you want to get yourself a solid third option, right? The Sabres now are Luukkonen, like Reimer, Levi. They've got their 1-2-3 or 1-3-2, whatever there is. But you look at most teams doing that. Now, Phoenix Copley, all right, he signed a one-year deal last year. He's only able to play 8 games and gets hurt, right? And he had a $1.5 million contract. Like, he was hoping this was going to continue to be maybe a $2 million the next year, whatever. It didn't happen. He got hurt. But the Kings stood by him, gave him a one-year deal at $875. They've got David Rittich, who is not making a whole lot either. I'm going to pull it up here.
But he probably overachieved to what in-season and early-season expectations were.
Or previous season's expectations.
Yeah. Like, but I mean, you also know this. You know this super well, because you literally live the position. You're always, people are going to think they know stuff, or they're just going to take a small sample size and blow it up and create a reputation for someone, right? The fact of the matter is there's less than 110 goalies in the NHL every season, typically. And if you're in that group, you're in that group for a reason. You can play the game. And I think Dave actually showed pretty well post Cam Talbot's, slide from all-star status in the early half of last year. So again, I think it was...
That cost Todd McLellan his job. He was refusing to play David Rittich and kept playing Cam Talbot when Talbot was struggling. And then Jim Miller comes in, plays David Rittich, and he did well. I mean, he had a 921 save percentage last year.
Remember, I was there. I was there for Jim Hiller's debut and big save.
Oh, yeah, Dave, that's right.
Shut out the Oilers on a Saturday night. Marquee matchup.
Sabres bye week. Sabres bye week. You were there.
Yeah.
And the Kings, let's not forget, because Sabres Live, we want to mention, there's always some Sabres tie. Eric Portillo is, one of their in the barn type of goalie that he doesn't have a contract right now. He's an RFA, still waiting to get that next deal signed. But Eric Portillo is in the, you know, the picture of what a goaltending, you know, Camper and Portillo could be in a year or two from now.
Mm-hmm. Home opener, by the way, less than 2 months away. It will happen against the LA Kings, and we look forward to seeing you at KeyBank Center. There's other ways beyond just the one game for you to hang out with us at KeyBank, and that is mini packs. So they're available. You can build a pack of five or more games and ultimately save money by doing so. Ultimate flexibility allows you to enjoy great value and still see the matchups and opponents you want the most. Sabres.com/mini packs. We'll continue around the NHL begging for more offer sheets in this commercial break. Thank you, St. Louis, yesterday. And probably a little bit more information on the Kings as the team of the day. Your comments always welcome at Sabres Live on X. We're back after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are back. The Kings are the team of the day. Is there anything else you would want to add to a franchise that, you know, might appear to be a little stuck? The Athletic did an article on confidence in your front office.
Yeah.
And the Kings had a rather dramatic fall this year. Presumably based on the acquisition of Dubois, the lack of production from Dubois, and the ultimate departure of Dubois. I mean, what else do you want to add here to the Kings? Like, does Kemper reestablish himself as a decent number one after losing the gig to Charlie Lindgren last year in Washington?
Yeah, I think Kemper will be fine in LA. I think the LA Kings play a very tight defensive system, which will allow Kemper to just... You know, it, not like Washington. Washington was a team that I feel was they made the playoffs. Good for them, right? But their goal differential was awful. They opened it up a lot. It wasn't the same defensive structure that LA has. So I think that that will help Darcy Kemper, and he should be fine. I just don't think that the LA Kings are a team that's going to produce enough offensively, despite the fact that, yes, Kopitar and Byfield and Trevor Moore and Kempe, Fiala, whatever, are there. But they did lose Victor Arvidsson, which I really like Victor Arvidsson. I think he's a great player.
Missed most of the year.
He missed most of the year. And Pierre-Luc Dubois on a team that, well, you know, they turned that into a goaltender. Like, that doesn't help your offense, right? That doesn't help you score more goals. So, look, they added Janot and Fogle. I don't think it moves the needle offensively in the way that I wanted them to, but defensively, they'll be fine. They'll be top 10 defense, top 10 PK, but they'll go from 16 offensively in the NHL in goals for 4 per game to probably 20 and above. I think they'll drop offensively.
It was a wild end of the year for them. They could have found themselves where they ended up, which was third in their division, or they could have been wild card one or wild card two going into that final weekend. They won their last game, and I think it was the wrong thing to do because the last team they needed to see was Edmonton, and that's who they drew. And it was shorter, and aside from Kopitar's overtime heroics and their only win, it was just a poor showing by LA. Granted, Edmonton and McDavid came out of the blocks so hot in that series, which was obviously foreshadowing for how far they would go. But I think the Kings' draw would have been better if they had got Vancouver last year and fallen into that situation. I don't think they would have fared any better had they drawn Dallas, but whatever. That's, you know, I mean, no need to
look at the scores. 7-4. And then the Kings came back to win 5-4 in OT. Okay, good. 6-1, 1-0, 4-0, 4-3. But they gave up a ton of goals to the LA Kings in that. So again, is it okay? Maybe your defense can hold up. They did add Joel Edmondson on the back end. Like you talked about.
What
Brent
do you
Clark.
Make of that deal? And I 100% honesty here.
Yeah,
I had forgotten that they signed him to this 4-year deal at just under $4 million per. I did. Like, I totally missed it, seemingly, on free agency. My question is, who was bidding against them?
Yes. Because he did.
Like, Joel's fine. He's 31. But like, why do you need to go 4 years there?
Well, Joel was great with the St. Louis Blues for a few years, right? And then he went through, you know, a little bit of Carolina, Montreal, Washington, Toronto. Like, he moved around. Again, mm-hmm. who's going to offer Joel Edmondson 4+ or close to 4+? Like, that's 3.8 for 4 years. I think it's fair. But you better get back to a certain level. Right. I didn't see that level with the Montreal Canadiens a whole lot. And to be honest with you, last year, I didn't watch a ton of him because I was like, hey, he's off my radar now. He's not one that is, hey, could the Sabres be interested in Joel Edmondson at some point?
Right.
He's getting older and his play has been diminishing a little bit. So it's a fair contract. I think the length, the term is a little bit long for me. So if you had given him a 2-year deal at 3.8, fine. 4 years, a little bit long.
Yeah. He's no Ben Chiarot, I think, is what you were saying when you were, you know, you had the Montreal teams on the radar.
Yeah. Or David Savard, or like, there was so many of those defensemen that were on Montreal back
now,
then.
Why did you have to bring up Savard? Like, was it last year?
What did I do?
It was, don't you remember the early season loss to Montreal when Savard blocked like 600 shots in the last minute and a half of the game?
Yeah,
he's got out there hurt, with one
and
arm.
Then he ended up, Pat McAfee did a huge thing on his show about hockey is awesome, and David Savard, that guy is crazy, broke his hand, kept playing, lost a skate blade, couldn't get up, was still in
it
the way.
Wild.
Like, it was incredible.
Yeah, it was absolutely wild. Okay, so
How about Drew Doughty on defense? How about Drew Doughty? Still has quite a few years at $11 million. It's 3 years at 11. So Drew Doughty, is he still at the level where you're going to watch him and say, I got to watch Doughty tonight?
No, not to the same level as when he came in. And I was fascinated by, you know, the reputation he was carrying as a high pick into the NHL.
Yes.
But he's lived up to it. He's had some injuries, as almost everyone has, especially with the way he plays. But as you've pointed out often off air, Drew represents himself, right?
Yes.
Contractually. And there isn't a single player in the league that would like to put up a single digit more to anyone and everyone that doesn't believe he's worthy of the contract that he has. And I think we've seen that again. I think Doughty has been really good the last couple of years. And it's like, okay, this deal is going to work out for LA. So good for him.
How many times he's found a way
to still be impactful.
He had 15 goals last year. How many times in his career has he scored over 15 goals?
12.
No, once. He has scored.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking double digits. How many times did he do double digits?
Oh, double digits. He did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, 8 times double digits.
Oh,
he hasn't hit double digits in goals since 2017, 2018, when he had 10. The last 6 seasons, 8, 7, 8, 7, 9, 15. So he took a step forward last year with the 15 goals, and that's the most goals he'd scored in a season since his second year. I was still playing that year. That's 2009-2010. I was with the New York Islanders. So yeah, that's a long time ago, but he had his best goal scoring year since 09-10.
You mentioned Ullmark. That'll be the last note there, Doughty on the Kings. You mentioned Ullmark and him not ending up in LA. What do you make of Ullmark being back in the news cycle here?
This is hilarious, right? Because we did our goalie rankings the other day because the NHL Network decided to put it out. And I'm like, this is going to be fun. Let's talk goalies, right? But what we didn't know is there was going to be more drama associated with that list when Ilya Samsonov, or however you want to say his last name, decided to comment on the NHL Network post because Ullmark was 10th on the list, number 10 and a heart next to it. And then he decided to comment again. Some speculated that maybe Samsonov forgot to change to maybe his burner account because he had already commented once. And then he commented again, November 21st, keep your head up or will you be injured for that one again or something? Or, you know, I mean, yes, Ullmark was hurt a couple of times when playing the Leafs or whatnot. And then, you know, they went to Swayman in the playoffs and all of it. But yeah, Ullmark made the comments on Samsonov the other day. I don't know why they kept going with Samsonov. They should have gone with Wall earlier. Wall was better. We felt like we knew how to beat Samsonov, and now you know, Samsonov responds back to Allmark. I think it's some stupid social media beef, but it gave us a little, gave me a little chuckle.
We need more of it, right?
See, like, if I'm to tell my kids, like, no, don't get involved in those things. If Ilya Samsonov, or even, I get what Allmark was trying to say when he had the interview. He wanted to give a compliment to Joseph Wall, saying he's good. And we felt like he was good, but he used the back of his
hand. You know, Linus, he always has a little extra to tweak you with. One more quarter turn of the screw.
Yes, Linus has that. What started with probably trying to a compliment to Joe Wall turned into a backhand like slap to Ilya Samsonov. But if I'm trying as a father to tell my kids, don't comment on these posts. Don't, like, you want to have a you know, text me. Text me that you're, and vent to me. Don't vent on social media. But hey, you know, I love the drama because I know we're going to talk about it this year when these two teams play. Vegas and Ottawa, by the way. It's not Toronto and Boston anymore because Samsonov is in Vegas and
all. Feels weird, huh? To it suggest that that's your...
Because when they said November 21st, hey, I started to look at the schedule. I'm like, damn, Toronto and Boston don't play that day. And then I was like, oh, wait, it's Vegas and Ottawa.
Is it a Wednesday? And is NBA coming, or is NBC coming back to do rivalry night for us?
Just for that one. No, let me see. November 21st, it is a Thursday night. It's the Thursday before, the week before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is on the November 28th, and that's the week before.
So will either Allmark or Samsonov be the starting netminder when that game rolls around?
Like, just, you gotta send a memo to both teams prior. You know, when you make your schedule for the next 10 days, remember on November 21st, we'd love to see Samsonov and Allmark in net for that Vegas Ottawa game.
Most willing participant in a goalie fight among those two?
Linus. I think Linus is stronger, and I think it wouldn't be a good fight for Samsonov.
How many games for Samsonov this year in the Vegas net?
Probably 30, 35. Like, okay. I think Aiden.
How many Hill for Linus based on the fact he's coming out of a rotation?
Linus is going to be. You think Linus goes 60 plus? Yeah, 55 to 60.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I think that the Ottawa Senators.
Do you think he'll end up there long term? I'm blowing the Ottawa coverage here for a team of the day, like a month down the road, but.
Yeah, it's still far down the road, so we can talk about it a little bit right now. I think Allmark is going to play the last year of his deal right now and reevaluate, but for him to make the, I'm going to call him a sacrifice, because he had the no movement clause and no trade, and apparently, you know, there was Toronto and Ottawa on the destination, and he said, I don't want to go to Toronto. And chose Ottawa to go to. I think that the door is open for Allmark to stay there long term. And really, if you look around the league, where's Linus Allmark going to go long term, making good money as a UFA? And teams are starting to line up their goalies, and I know there's going to be some up and down, but he decided not to go to LA. That would be one. LA, like, would you want to go to Calgary to get, you know, Dustin Wolf and whatever? I think Ottawa is a good spot for him.
I agree. But I also think there would be many suitors if he chose to go the free agent route once again. Who's to blame? Haven't done this in a while. Offer sheets happened yesterday. St. Louis targeting the Oilers. Mm-hmm. Every year, teams put themselves potentially in a vulnerable position.
Yes.
Is Ken Holland to blame for leaving the Oilers in this state, or is Stan Bowman to blame for not acting quickly once he got on board?
I'll say I think Ken Holland did some work with the Edmonton Oilers that put him in that situation in the first place. Listen, they got rid of Ryan McLeod, who came to Buffalo, Warren Fogle, and you know, they've lost who's the DRNA, the big defenseman. They lost quite a few players because their cap situation and their roster situation is that. And now they still not out of it because with Broberg and Holloway under contract, if they decide to retain them, they'd be $7.5 million over the cap. They still have to figure it out. So I would say Ken Holland. I think Stan Bowman, he has to get organized and kind of figure it out. And at this point, he probably really never anticipated anybody offering Broberg and Holloway. Like, I just don't.
Isn't that your job, though, to know that?
That would have been in a bad dream. Like, in a bad dream, you wake up in the morning in sweats and you're like, somebody offered Holloway and Broberg.
I get it, but I feel like everyone has to know the temperature of every situation. And now, part of this could also go on the person who did a really, almost unanimously great job navigating the Oilers for however long it was.
Yes.
President of Hockey Operations, Jeff Jackson, right? Did a great job. But if you're Stan Bowman, I can't even imagine, honestly, anymore. Like, we're too old. We have too many thoughts going through our heads as far as, what is an actual interview like at this point? You know, what is an actual interview like? Stan Bowman going, what are they actually asking? But part of me now is, if you're the incoming GM, wouldn't you be laying out the game plan here, covering all the bases? Here's what we need to do.
The game plan is, you got to re-sign Dreisaitl. You got to focus on Bouchard. McDavid is a year away. That's your game plan for Stan Bowman talking to Jeff Jackson. Holloway and Broberg are way down the list. I will get to them when we get to them. Rob Reichstein, right? We'll talk to you when you're the last contract we got to sign.
And this is valid. So maybe it actually came up. And collectively, they all just sit there. Maybe Stan had an idea on it. And it was don't worry about it. Organizationally, we have to focus on X, Y, Z, the big three. We know it, right? So maybe this is, if it happens, big deal. We'll figure it out, right? And it's kind of impossible to know, what the,
They signed Skinner. They signed Arvidsson. They did their business that was correct. At hand, right? And that was Jeff Jackson. You're right. But they did the business at hand. Stan Bowman comes in and he says, okay, now top priority, Dreisaitl. I got to think of Bouchard. I got to think of, everybody, what is happening moving forward. Look, you still have that conversation. I don't think the Oilers are going to lose sleep on losing Holloway or Broberg, the both of them. Or one of them or none of them, right? I mean, I don't think they're losing any sleep on it.
No, I am next to, the Gananoque River. So I was looking for the boat of us. And
the boat of us is not there.
It's not to be found right now, but we will be back right after this. And with the reminder, of course, that we're less than a month away now from the start of the Prospects Challenge.
Yes.
And it is happening with six teams at Lecom Harbor Center. Sabres, of course, will play three times, including the first one on September the 13th. And all the starts for the Sabres will be 7 p.m. games. You can head to sabres.com/prospects for ticket information. Back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, a little bit of time for birthdays. We mentioned Shea Weber, 39, earlier in the show. Scott Wedgwood, 32, now with the Predators. Carter Verhaeghe, still with the Panthers. He's 29. And the Avs' Logan O'Connor is 28. Of course, we have a big birthday tomorrow. Stay tuned for that. Marty.
Or today. We don't know.
Or today. Well, if anybody's deserving of having it over multiple days, it's you, right?
So it will be 47 tomorrow. I thought I'm getting the number 47.
You went and ruined it. Darn.
What?
There goes the question of who's older.
They don't have to know. They just can guess. I thought of you. I've gone to number 47 when I had to change from double zero. But J.S. Jaguar at 47, and he and I competed in juniors and everything. I'm like, I don't want his number. So I didn't pick 47.
Did you ever have gear as big as his?
I tried. It was uncomfortable. Because we used the same cold wraps and the same everything. Yes. We skated together in the summer. And I tried the big knee pads and everything. It was uncomfortable. I couldn't move. It worked for him. He didn't have to move. I like to move in my gear. So that worked better.
Wow.
Now, his gear is humongous. Humongously big, as Bruce Golub would say.
Yeah. There's a lasting image for me of him in the handshake line when they lost to the Devils in 7 games. And the size comparison between him and Brodeur was ridiculous. We'll see you tomorrow on Marty's birthday. caricature of every situation. And now part of this could also go on the person who did a really, almost unanimously great job navigating the Oilers for however long it was.
Yes.
President of hockey operations, Jeff Jackson, right? Did a great job. But if you're Stan Bowman, I can't even imagine, honestly, anymore. Like, we're too old. We have too many thoughts going through our heads as far as, like, what is an actual interview like at this point? What is an actual interview like? Stan Bowman going, like, what are they actually asking? But part of me now is like, if you're the incoming GM, like, wouldn't you be laying out the game plan here, covering all the bases? Here's what we need to do.
The game plan is, you got to re-sign Dreisaitl. You got to focus on Bouchard. McDavid is a year away. That's your game plan for Stan Bowman, talking to Jeff Jackson. Holloway and Broberg are way down the list. Oh, we'll get to them when we get to them. Rob Reichstein, right? Like, we'll talk to you when you're the last contract we got to sign.
And this is valid. Like, so maybe it actually came up. And collectively, they all just sit there. Like, maybe Stan had an idea on it. And it was like, don't worry about it. Organizationally, we have to focus on X, Y, Z, the big three. We know it, right? So maybe this is, if it happens, big deal. We'll figure it out, right? And it's kind of impossible to know, like, what the, you know.
They signed Skinner. They signed Arvidsson. They did their business that was at hand, right? And that was Jeff Jackson. You're right. But they did the business at hand. Stan Bowman comes in and he says, okay, now top priority, Dreisaitl. I got to think of Bouchard. I got to think of, everybody, what is happening moving forward. Look, you still have that conversation. I don't think the Oilers are going to lose sleep on losing Holloway or Broberg, the both of them. Or one of them, or none of them, right? I mean, I don't think they're losing any sleep on it.
No, I am next to, I think, the Gananoque River, so I was looking for the boat of us. And
the boat of us is not there.
It's not to be found right now, but we will be back right after this. And with the reminder, of course, that we're less than a month away now from the start of the Prospects Challenge.
Yes.
And it is happening with six teams at Lecom Harbor Center. Sabres, of course, will play three times, including the first one on September the 13th. And all the starts for the Sabres will be 7 p.m. games. You can head to sabres.com/prospects for ticket information. Back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, a little bit of time for birthdays. We mentioned Shea Weber, 39, earlier in the show. Scott Wedgwood, 32, now with the Predators. Carter Verhaeghe, still with the Panthers. He's 29. And the Avs' Logan O'Connor is 28. Of course, we have a big birthday tomorrow. Stay tuned for that. Marty.
Or today. We don't know.
Or today. Well, I mean, if anybody's deserving of having it over multiple days, it's you, right?
Well, yeah. So it will be 47 tomorrow. I thought I'm getting the number 47.
Oh, you went and ruined it. Darn.
What?
There goes the question of who's older.
Well, they don't have to know. They just can guess. I thought of you. I've gone to number 47 when I had to change from 00. But J.S. Jaguar at 47, and he and I competed in juniors and everything. I'm like, I don't want his number. So I didn't pick 47.
Did you ever have gear as big as his?
I tried. It was uncomfortable. Because we used the same cold wraps and the same everything.
Yes.
We skated together in the summer. And I tried the big knee pads and everything. It was uncomfortable. I couldn't move. It worked for him. He didn't have to move. I like to move in my gear. So that worked better.
Wow.
Now, his gear was humongous, humongously big, as Burzgalov would say.
Yeah. There's a lasting image for me of him in the handshake line when they lost to the Devils in 7 games. And the size comparison between him and Brodeur was ridiculous. We'll see you tomorrow on Marty's birthday.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.